This is a BloomerBoomer.com podcast with host Andy Asher.
Well, hi, everyone. Hope things are going okay. Bloomer Boomer started a new podcast interview show in 2014, and it's about life passions over 55. Now, the one thing that came back time and again are the stories of people around retirement age who find a new or an abandoned passion to pursue later in life. So we started a series of interviews with ordinary people, achievers, and in-betweens, and we asked them, is it a job, a vocation, a hobby, family member? Now we're talking to folks who have a passion and an engagement about what they do. And today we speak to an author who comes from it from a different direction. She is an author asking those questions of 50 Chicagoans living with passion and purpose. Most are of retirement age. Her name is Betsy Storm, author of Bright Lights of the Second City. And Betsy, thanks so much for joining us. And we'll just ask you point blank, what is it that they've got?
I think the main takeaways are never giving up. And having a belief in something, feeling that that's what you have to do, whether it's act, whether it's work on a cause, no matter what it might be, it is that thing that helps all these people not only get up in the morning, but get up in the morning wanting to make a difference, wanting to make something better or enhance a situation or whatever their passion is. They have that extra oomph, and it seems like you have to have that. We all know that. I mean, we're told that from the time, I think most of us are told that from the time that we're young, that things generally do not come easily to us, and anything that's worth having is worth working hard for. And to a person, every single one of these people probably packs more into a day and a year, you know, than lots of other people might.
So what you might be saying, if I read between the lines, is that some of these people, or most of these people, just have it. In other words, they've got the drive. It's not something you can learn about. You've got to either have it or not, or am I wrong about that?
No, I don't really think that's true. I mean, I do think there's a bit of nurture versus nature in there, and some people definitely are born with it. But I think others, because they have a particular interest, maybe it's a little bit of a chicken or an egg situation. They have an interest, they want to make a difference, and they realize the only way to do that, to cut through all the messages and all the clutter in the world, is to define yourself clearly and define your purpose, passion, and make a plan for your life. That's the other thing. I think a lot of these people, they might not have written it out as a 5-year plan or whatever, but they know what they're doing. They're not taking their life by any means one day at a time in the way of goals. You know, they're clear upon what they need to succeed.
So, Betsy, in your conversations with these people, did you have an opportunity to talk about what were the obstacles in their way? Because I'm sure that it couldn't have been clear sailing for all 50 people you talked to.
Oh, certainly. In many of the interviews, we talked about that. You know, what were the obstacles and how did you overcome them? And I think that's pretty clearly where character development comes in. In some cases, they learned from their early life experiences with either parents or scouting or someone who they knew gave them the message that whether it's you need to be honest if you don't know something, don't be a faker, you know, be authentic, be genuine, and take a chance on yourself. Believe in yourself and take that chance, because there were several anecdotes in here, pretty dramatic ones, where people could have taken the other path in the road, and that path would have led them perhaps to an easier life, maybe, but it required an extra dose of courage or commitment to do something even when things were not looking all that bright all the time.
So, Betsy, we know Chicago is one of the great cities and it has just some amazing people there. But beyond that, what inspired the book?
Well, the book title, Bright Lights of the Second City, says a lot about you know, trying to find people in our wonderful city who make our city special. And I did make an effort to represent Chicago, from its museums to the sciences to spirituality to the arts, activism, philanthropy. So that was kind of my overarching plan, was to see, okay, we have all these people who have achieved in all different fields. What are some of the commonalities there? And I was interested in that because I think many of us wonder, why do some people succeed at such a high level and just clearly live their lives to the max in every way, and others simply do not? I mean, why do some people have more of that passion and purpose? We don't really know that, but for sure. But one thing we saw across the board and that we know now is that that drive is required. Every one of these people came across, as we talked about, obstacles, whether it was not getting the job they wanted, being discouraged by people to seek the career that they did, knowing that, for example, in the theater, the odds of success in the theater, as we know, unfortunately, are very small. But the belief in yourself and the belief that you just have to keep putting yourself in different positions to succeed. And if you can do that, no guarantee you'll get to the top of the list, but you will get more in the direction you want to go, and you will, most importantly, lead a more satisfying and full life.
Yeah, that's a great lesson. And with all of those successes, we forget that there were probably some failures along the way, too.
Absolutely. From the people, even one of the most prominent people in my book, Captain Jim Lovell, the Apollo 13 astronaut, you know, who is such a hero to so many people, and he's now age 86. And he was very clear about how he handled rejection and the fact that rejection came his way. As a teenager, he was rejected once from Annapolis, the Naval Academy, before being accepted. And, you know, I think many of us, if we're honest, admit that if we're rejected from something we want, we just go down the line and maybe don't try as hard, or we don't try again for that same opportunity because we don't want to be rejected again. But you have to have your tough skin on sometimes, and he reapplied to Annapolis and was accepted. That same thing happened to Jim Lovell when he applied for the space program. And here he is, one of the great heroes of the space program, and he was not accepted the first time he applied for the space program. He just didn't get in. He reapplied a couple of years later, did get in, and as it turned out, it was a better time for him to be accepted because the program was more, it was more secure, it was more advanced, and it ended up being a benefit to him to perhaps not be accepted that first time. And I thought that was a really interesting lesson, that that's an observation that we can all use, is, okay, try, but if you don't get it, don't go hide in the corner. Either try something else or try that again. Come back with another plan, a better plan, whatever it is. But don't, if you have a dream, you know, it's got to be pursued. Because as you know, better than I, because this is your area where you spend a lot of time working, people who are getting ready to retire, many of them today, as we know, start whole new careers, or get part-time jobs in a field where they've just been interested, but, you know, perhaps it didn't pay enough, or they take on a position as a docent at a museum. They are able to reimagine their lives, and I think that's what many of these people had to do also, that their life perhaps didn't take the trajectory that they thought it would, so they had to do something else. And I think we all want our retirement to be as, many of us, you know, yes, we want more rest, but we also want to remain vital and interesting. And part of that is, you know, learning to start over and start fresh.
So you probably came across examples of people who had to practically reinvent themselves.
Absolutely. And some of them are quite dramatic. There's a woman named Marka Bristow, who is head of Access. A Chicago nonprofit that serves people with disabilities. And it's one of the most progressive in the country. It's always cited as one of the models for independent living for people with disabilities. And Marka, at 23, had been planning to, she was studying to be a midwife at 23 in Chicago. And at that age, she experienced a diving accident that resulted in her being paralyzed from the chest down. At 23, I mean, you can imagine. And after working through the anger and the hurt and the frustration and many other issues, she ended up becoming a leading national and international activist and advocate in the disability movement, which was starting and developing a lot in the late 70s and early 80s. And so she went from being, you know, possibly being a midwife, which is a great career, no doubt about it, and I interviewed a midwife for the book, but she had to look at her life and make some changes, and she became so committed to this, to the situation that had caused her the pain. She turned that upside down completely, became a social activist on an international level, and she reminds people, you know, that we all have lessons to learn in terms of there's a matter of observing and listening to what's going on around us and finding out what we might be called to do, you know, not in a religious way, but is there a call, is there a need that really, really appeals to us? And the disability movement actually helped her reclaim the power that she had lost after her accident. And as a result, she's made this contribution and been part of something far larger than herself and had a phenomenal career. I mean, that's a very dramatic example, but many of these people have, you know, examples that are perhaps not quite as vivid, but still make the point that you can't just throw in the towel when things get tough. You have to figure out what you're going to do with it to give your life the meaning and purpose that you want and not have that determined by somebody else.
So, Betsy, for someone who may be at a certain time in their life where they're not where they want to be or they're not doing what they want to be, there are lots of roadblocks in the way of moving forward. What did you learn from some of the people you spoke to?
Most people want to be able to say, I made a meaningful contribution in at least one way, maybe more. And for all of these people, I think that is what keeps them going, knowing if they take the next step, if they don't give up, there's a better likelihood that they will achieve that contribution that they would like to be associated with.
But to reach the level of being interviewed and written about in your book, let's keep in mind not everyone is going to achieve that level of recognition, but they still need to be just as proud of what they're doing as if they were one of the subjects in your book.
A lot of these people are not household names. I mean, they're known within their fields, their respective fields, but they're not all somebody who, if you had eight people sitting around the table, they would know that name. And I wanted it to be that way. I wanted to have people who were well-respected within a particular field, even if it isn't, quote-unquote, I wasn't looking for celebrities by any means.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So a lot of these people you may not have heard of, but they are extremely accomplished. Many of them have written books and spoken on panels. And, for example, one of them is a bioethicist. And she has advised two presidents on issues related to cloning. She's written several books. But you might not know her name unless you're in the field or perhaps live here in the city. But that's she was somebody who at the age of, I don't know, eight or so, I mean, she's a lawyer, and obviously she is interested in ethics as a bioethicist. And some of these stories are just plain entertaining. I mean, the doll head of her Ken doll fell off, you know, her Barbie Ken doll.
Okay.
So she wrote to Mattel and complained, and they sent her a new head. And that's an ethicist was born.
That's a,
you know.
So at what did you say, age eight, she learned a life lesson, didn't she?
Right, is you have to, you know, take your stand, make your legitimate complaint, state your case, and try and improve it. And
yeah.
That kind of goes along with the idea of these people all trying to make a difference, whether it's in jobs for people who were underserved or minority groups or people who one gentleman who has made a big difference in the world of spirituality has spent his life trying to advance the cause of religious tolerance and freedom. And as a young man, he started being interested in that, worked hard to establish different groups and get on international panels. I mean, that, I guess that's what I mean about the plan. Even though they didn't know what every step would be, I think more importantly, there was an idea that there was a plan for them and they needed to define it.
Yeah, that's, I guess, the key word there is define that for themselves, because no one's going to define it for them, unfortunately.
Exactly, yeah, the sense of self-determination. And I think we all like to hear those stories. I know I do, because we all get discouraged at times and think, oh, my dream is too unrealistic, or how would I go about starting this or that? Another interesting thing that I observed is many of these people talked about how helpful other people were to them when they asked for help. You know, that there are resources out there if you want to try something new or get involved in whether it's a hobby or perhaps a job or a small business or invent something. People are really, in many cases, very, very willing to help and share information. And I think that's great information for us all to have, that, you know, we're not alone in our dreams. Most of us have some, and so we're happy to share some of our information with others.
Yeah, that's a good lesson. And as we get older, sometimes we do get a little bit more reclusive, and your life is not about an island. You have to, it's important to discover that there are others out there that can help you or give you inspiration or just the energy to push on, because you can't do it all alone entirely.
No, absolutely not. Plus, it's not as much fun.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's
for sure. Yeah. Well, as we wind down, these are some great lessons I think that people can take away if they think through what some of these other achievements are. And it sounds like that's part of the purpose for the book, other than to recognize these achievements, but for others to maybe learn by it.
Absolutely. I know I look at how much I learned doing it. And listening to the sometimes seemingly small steps that people took that made a difference in their lives, having that spelled out for us, you know, even the people who are so accomplished, somebody like Ramsey Lewis, you know, he's a jazz legend. Everyone knows who he is. But when he set out to do a particular piece of music that had to do with Abraham Lincoln's birthday, celebrating Abraham Lincoln's, I believe it was 200th birthday in Illinois, he was asked, you know, to write a piece of music for it. And he didn't at first really know what to do. He had to put a lot of study and time into it. He went to that, you know, Lincoln Museum. He did a lot of writing. He did things to prepare himself to be successful. And I think that's a key point.
So, Betsy, as we come to a close here, you told me earlier there you're actually a person over 55 who is living a dream, a passion, accomplishing something that you had only dreamed of.
Right. And the other thing is, I'm 60, and I've always wanted to write a book. And in the back of my mind, always, I've worked as a magazine editor, communications consultant, a freelance writer, but in the back of my mind, I always thought, well, I want to write a book. Of course, I write it until I know exactly what I want to write it about. This is my own dream that it took me, you know, a few years to do because I do work, you know, and there were no guarantees about this. This was just my dream that I wanted to pursue. So in a way, it kind of exemplifies what I'm talking about for all of us, I guess, is that at 60, I can have this dream come true for myself because I put a lot of work into it. And I didn't give up on my own dream. I kept it.
Well, Betsy, this has really been fascinating. Any final takeaways you want to share with us before we wind up?
Well, one thing and I'd like to mention is there's a couple people in the book who talk about the importance, too, of even though we're looking forward and looking to make plans and advance whatever our dreams are, it sounds contrary, but it isn't, is the importance also of appreciating staying where we are and being in the now. I interviewed at least two people who have regular meditation practices, and they're both extremely successful. And meditation is an example of something that doesn't take a lot of time. I do it myself, but it does help to, say, center the mind and bring a certain kind of peace and just being able to enjoy where you are in your life at the same time, especially with the people who you're talking about. You know, we've lived, we've worked, we've had our kids, you know, we've sacrificed and overcome difficulties, and it's a great lesson to learn to just also be in the now and enjoy that too.
Great information. Well, Betsy, thanks again so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to our BloomerBoomer.com podcast. We provide transcripts for most of our podcasts, and you can also access all of our podcasts on iTunes. Oh, and we encourage you to leave a comment in the podcast reply section. And finally, we would love it if you'd register to receive our newsletter. Thanks again.